Just that music makes me want to watch another episode. It's just, I've been just binge watching it for the last couple days.
Making a Murderer is the Netflix smash hit.
So
more
good.
People are watching this thing on Netflix than are watching any other show on all of television.
Isn't
whether
that
crazy? It is cable television or pay cable or downloading anything, it's crazy right now.
And it's basically become a documentary that two Columbia students made over the course of 10 years, right, in Manitowoc County.
Right, and it's fascinating, and it is the story of not only this one guy who is the central character,
mm-hmm.
wrongly accused of a rape, spent, 18 years?
18 years out of like a 36-year sentence or 40-year sentence, something like that. Yeah.
In state prison, and then gets out and becomes literally the poster child for wrongful convictions in Wisconsin. They change a law surrounding him. All the politicians rush to get their picture taken with the guy. But then he decides he's going to sue the state of Wisconsin for his 18 years in prison, and he's trying to find a way to get a bunch of depositions of the Manitowoc County Sheriff's Office and the prosecutors there and everybody else who was involved in the case.
Mm-hmm.
And then right before they get to the two head honchos, a couple days before their depositions, he gets arrested on a murder charge. And that's where this net series, which is about 11 hours in length, takes off. And what is interesting about this is a story that I think the nation was really familiar with until this came out,
but
was big shakes up in Wisconsin for a long time. And Michael Griesbach is a guy who was a district attorney in Wisconsin, Manitowoc County, as a matter of fact. He's written a book called The Innocent Killer. It came out a couple of years ago. And Michael, what's interesting about this is that now that this Netflix thing has made this a national obsession, now it sort of gives new life, doesn't it, to your work here?
Well, yeah. I mean, I can't say I'm sad about that, but it has. I mean, it's brought interest into the whole thing. You know, the ABA, the American Bar Association, right there in Chicago, of course, published this book I wrote, The Innocent Killer, A True Story of a Wrongful Conviction, It's an Astonishing Aftermath, about the same case, you know.
Mm-hmm.
This crazy, crazy case that started really, I call it a 30-year crime saga. And Netflix, Making a Murder, just added the last episode of this crazy, crazy case.
Right, and this came out a couple of years ago, 2016. Well, 2 years ago now, I guess, technically. And what is interesting is this case, as you see it in the Netflix documentary, and you've seen that, I'm assuming? Because you were in it.
I binge-watched all 10 episodes just like you guys did.
Yeah, right. I mean, people just can't get out of the way of it when they start to watch it.
That's interesting that you watched all of it at once. I bet you had all kinds of feelings watching it, having known so much about the case.
You know, it's really weird. I know the people. I know the area. Of course, Wisconsin, after watching that, you think it's always colder than below zero and about 5 feet of snow, and it's gray, it's foreboding, and we're all corrupt, and et cetera.
Backwards, right. It's what it
no, that's like. Really Chicago's reputation, but you guys are second. You can be second.
Yeah.
Right, so this is Stephen Avery and the Avery family, who, and they make the documentarians make this point that the Averys are very, very unpopular folks in Manitowoc because they were social outliers. They ran this is mostly farmers, and they ran a salvage yard essentially, and they junked cars and they didn't behave. And Stephen Avery himself had a checkered past when he was a kid.
Right. His brothers did. The whole family seemed to be.
So what is wrong? I want to get right to the bottom line here though, Michael. What is, at the end of this, the documentarians who put this thing together want us to believe that Stephen Avery has been wrongfully convicted of this murder that he was accused of in the, you know, that took place during the civil trial, the run up for the civil trial for his wrongful conviction. Do you believe that Stephen Avery is an innocent man behind bars?
I don't. I'm firmly convinced that he's a guilty man. This time he's rightfully convicted. You know, I get it when people watch that. You come away from that. And by the way, there's all kinds of important lessons in the criminal justice act that they do address, and I think are really important to address. But it really is one-sided if you know the rest of the story. And that I guess I'm not just speaking as a prosecutor. I'm on the Innocence Project board in Wisconsin and Madison, and I like to think I can look at these things objectively, as much as any of us can. We're in this system so long. But, you know, can I give you just a for instance?
Yes. Yeah, now, let me do this before we do this, because this is broadcasting, and people have been, you know, they're watching this, or they may be part of the way through it, and they don't want to hear too many spoilers. I'm not afraid to go into spoilers here, because I think enough people have seen it. And for those who haven't, and that's the majority of the audience listening right now, I think it's interesting to know this story. You can still watch it and get – it's still a brilliantly – produced piece of television that you will be in. And as you're pointing out, Michael, there's a lot of important lessons for the entire criminal justice system in here that you'll be outraged by no matter what the outcome is here. Mm-hmm. But Stephen Avery, there are things that these documentarians do not. They explicitly leave out that are very, very important, right?
Correct. For instance, the first one is the cat burning incident. Mm-hmm. So they reference, because they can't leave it out completely, but they reference this time when Avery was about 22, when Mr. Avery was about 22 or so. And they say that, you know, this cat that he was holding ended up in the fire and died. Well, what they leave out is actually he doused the cat with gasoline and oil and then threw it in the fire. You know, that's kind of a different thing.
It is different. But that's incredibly cruel, too.
And it's also the argument that was used as for what he did with the body of the murder victim in this case.
That's right. Fire, you know, fire and animal abuse actually hit both at the same time. Those are signs or things that psychologists look to as, you know, potential signs of some people that later go on to commit homicides. But, you know, that's just what, that just gives you an idea, I guess, of what they left out. One other quick thing, because I know, you know, we only have so much time here, but another really quick thing is that they had to reference the crime that Mr. Avery was convicted for just around the same time as the 1985 wrongful conviction, which is when he rammed his pickup truck into this woman's car and then held her at rifle point. So what do they say? They say, well, he was just upset at her because the woman down the street was, you know, making fun of him and just wasn't very nice to him. Well, in fact, because I researched all this for my book, what he did was he had been watching her for weeks, watching her with binoculars as she got into her car, stripping himself naked, running out in the car in the drive or in the road naked. Mm-hmm. And then when he rammed her in her car, his pickup truck into her car, there was clear intent that he was going to assault the woman, but he, you know, he let her go after she had a little baby in the car. But, you know, I think that just gives you an idea sort of how slanted and sort of agenda driven.
Right. Yeah. And the thing is, they want to tell the story of a corrupt wrongful conviction, a corrupted wrongful conviction. And they do tell that, and they tell it well. And there are people who should, and they were in the criminal justice system and remained in it in Manitowoc County, Wisconsin for a long time, mm-hmm. who probably should not have. And there should have been a federal investigation in this, or further investigation into it for sure, whether state or federal. And that seemed to have been swept under the rug. However, in the murder part, the murder piece of this, which is the thing that is most compelling, because now there were 250,000 signatures on an online petition to send to the governor of Wisconsin, who just responded this morning to this, mm-hmm. who said, you know, give this guy a reprieve and you know, let him go. Pardon him, and the governor's office said, No, we're not doing that. Because people are just watching this, and they're so swept into it. There's one other piece of this that's important to note too, for those who've watched this series and are wondering about it. This is the woman who was a photographer, the woman who disappeared and then was murdered because, you know, parts of her body were found. Had worked for Auto Trader. She was a photographer who worked for Auto Trader, who would go mm-hmm. and take pictures of vehicles, you know, for the Auto Trader website and magazine, all of that. And so she goes to this guy's junkyard, Stephen Avery's junkyard, or the junkyard in which he was living in a trailer. And she then disappears from that point forward. Now, What is interesting to note about this was that he had requested her. This is similar to the story you just told, Michael. He had requested her to be there a few times before. I think it's two or three times prior.
Mm-hmm. I think it was three, yeah.
And when she arrived, he would come out wearing a towel.
At
he had once brandished a weapon and did not, and she, this woman said, I don't want to go back. She said to her boss, I don't want to go back and take pictures.
Yeah, and that part wasn't included at all. So it was sort of shocking. When you even mentioned it to me today, Ro, in the pre-show meeting, I thought, really? That happened? There were those details that were not in it.
Yeah.
To be fair, you guys, he did show up with a towel, only a towel, which is pretty weird, wrapped around, but he never brandished a weapon.
Okay.
You know, it's real detail-driven, this whole thing. But one thing they left out, and by the way, I did not hold back on suggesting that the original wrongful conviction, the sheriff and the then DA here in Manitowoc, it was as bad as it gets. Some wrongful convictions are sort of, they happen by mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Not this one. This screams police and prosecutor misconduct, you know, and that's coming from a prosecutor here.
Well, I guess begs the question, how do you then trust some of those same people in that same department to then prosecute him for the second crime? You know, I mean, that's what you're left with when you watch this. Like, how is it okay after you see tampered evidence and defense attorneys working with prosecutors and all these really shocking things behind the scenes that just don't feel right for a justice system to be part of? And then you say, well, okay, you've got some of the same players working on the second case.
Right, and I think some of the same players never should have gone into the trailer to search for the now called magic key. But let me just say, the sheriff at that time retired; he's long gone. The DA at that time is long gone. I'm talking, this is 20 years ago. The two guys they're most accusing are two guys named Jim Link, who's mm-hmm. retired; he's in Arizona, and Andy Colborn, who's still there. And I agree, you know, they should never have been around the trailer, but they weren't involved in the wrongful conviction. What they were involved in is getting a call 10 years after Avery was wrongly convicted from the Green Bay, as in Green Bay Packer, police department. Sorry, Bears fan.
Yeah, we don't really like the mentions of that kind of thing here, but all right.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so
all
sorry.
Right.
Anyhow, so this detective calls and gets Link and Colburn on the phone, who were then just deputies, saying, hey, this guy's confessing to something that somebody else there did that you got him in prison for. Link and Colburn send the word up to the sheriff, and it's the sheriff who's really the big bad dude here, in my opinion, and in the book, and the DA. Sheriff says, nope, we got the right guy. Don't worry about it. So that's the only way these guys get involved, you know, and that's why this is so detail-driven. They weren't the guys, the original guys who did this have long been gone, not to say that department wasn't tainted.
Well, it was a department that already showed that it had something for this guy. And, you know, you can say it wasn't the exact same guys, but it was a very small department, a very small group of people involved, and you would think that there might be some conflict there.
It's interesting when you watch this thing on Netflix, when you watch this Making a Murderer, you see the in the aftermath of the way, despite the way the narrative is being built for our entertainment and information, mm-hmm. in that order, by the people making this documentary, the thing that is interesting is that they ask people along the way, well, don't you think that this guy's is he guilty? Just like you said, Michael, you know, is this guy really guilty of this, given all the conspiracies that happened around him?
Mm-hmm.
And people will calmly say, even the ones that look like bad guys in this, go, yeah, well, that's the way this guy's built. And the thing is that they don't mention all of the things that are in your book, The Innocent Killer, and some of the other details that are now starting to emerge because this thing has become such a phenomenon in America, that this is, literally, this is the changing moment for the way people will watch television in a lot of ways.
It is.
And so,
it's changing the conversation lately, too, I think.
Yeah, it's crazy. Yeah. And you're in it, by the way, Michael, so congratulations to you. You're a part of history. But the issue is this, and it's simple, is that it is a television show, and it is not telling you the full, it's not what the jury saw when they convicted him and his nephew.
Hey, Ro, you don't see cross-examination or rebuttal by the prosecution of those points they make, you know, and they call that in the law, I think they call it like the truth-seeking function of a jury trial. But they edit that out, you know, so all the explanations for the magic key and the blood planted, you know. But having said that, what I said in the book is this has all these what I called uncanny coincidences, and I really hope they're just coincidences, mm-hmm. that come up to make this defense possible. I mean, who happens to find the key? Nobody but Lincoln Colburn, the guys that took the call. Why is the blood even available to be planted? Because it's still in evidence in the clerk of court's office from 20 years earlier in the wrongful conviction suit. You know, right. It's just one weird thing after another, which might make you think, hey, maybe they did set this guy up. But, you know, you don't hear about the leg irons and the chains.
The leg irons, right. That one's shocking. That he had purchased them or something.
Right,
he
purchased
it
a week before, yeah.
You got it. I mean, this is not and before I say anything bad about the Avery's, you know, they're I agree with you, and I tried to point out in the book and the jury selection in the first place, they face an uphill battle. There's no way he was guilty. The jury should not have found him guilty. During jury selection, the jurors are asked, you know, does anybody know the Avery's? Oh, yeah, we know the Avery's. We can't be fair here, or we'll be fair, but then they say things that make it clear they can't be fair, you know. Mm-hmm. So it is an uphill battle. There's lessons about socioeconomic things, you know, poor folks, right to justice and that kind of stuff. Right.
That's what I took away from it, just thinking, gosh, would these same mistakes have been made had someone been able to afford a better defense in both of the case, the nephew's case too.
Although they got a great defense in the murder trial.
Right. Yeah. It's the first time around when he was wrongfully.
All right. Well, if you're watching this thing on Netflix, Michael Griesbach wrote the book 2 years ago that explains the other side of this, a more complete version of the story. If you're interested in that, it's called The Innocent Killer, and it is available where all fine books are sold on the internet. Right. And it's the American Bar Association that publishes. So, you know, I mean, and this is it's actually a pretty legalese and procedural kind of look at this. But, you know, the beautiful thing about this documentary is it mm-hmm. sets you up for that sort of data rich environment. You really have to pay attention as you're watching it. Mm-hmm. And, the book follows on with that same sort of style. So congratulations to you on this.
Yeah, thank you very much. You know, I tried to write it. I know we got to go. It's kind of a true crime thing too. Who needs boring legal stuff?
Oh yeah. No, it's
that.
Not. It's
I'm
not.
I'm dying to read it.
It's not like reading. It's not like reading depositions.
Do you have a point of view though? Do you think he's guilty or not guilty? Just quickly. I know we got to go. But do you?
Yeah. Well, I don't tell the reader that, but I have a pretty clear point of view that I think the defensive evidence planting was crazy in the second trial, and I mean I was very concerned that he would walk. And the jury was out 3 days, you know, that he would walk to get acquitted of the murder.
You've got jurors now. You can talk about this all day long. This is how crazy this is.
It's just taking on a life of its own.
Jurors who came on the Today Show on Monday and saying, no, we thought he was innocent, but we didn't know what to do. All right, well, Michael, thank you very much.
Michael.
We may be talking to you again because this will not go away. We'll see what happens.
Just don't mention any more Packers references, all right? We don't like that.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, good luck in the playoffs. Okay, thank you.
All right, bye.
Yeah, all right, got to go.